Okay, so it's 2 pages long, and we wrote it in the 2 Sunday parody meetings that go on every Sunday. One is like a book. We read books, we read about parody, and we talk about it. And the other one is part of the AMI, American Monetary Institute. We're going to have a parody page on the AMI's website. So that's the next thing we're working on. Yeah, it's good. So we can take turns reading this. I think it's really well done. We spent a lot of time on it. I learned a lot. I'm always learning about parody. Because for me, I don't have any farm experience. I don't have any business experience in terms of being a business owner. You know? So it fills out my lack of experience in all of this, you know? So, does anyone want to start reading?
It's an article, Sue? It's meant to be an article?
It's meant to be a sheet of paper that you hand out. You can email it to people. You can hand it to people at demonstrations. You know, and it gives... It's to people who don't know anything about the parody history or what parody was.
So would you scroll down on your screen?
Yeah. Hold on, how do I do that?
You just take that little bar there you see on the right-hand side, the little dark thing? Yeah, there you go. That's good.
So Kevin's reading ahead.
Yeah, now you know what I'm thinking, Sue? This is an image, right?
This picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a picture. Okay, well, do you have like a PDF program? You could select these images on this and copy just the image part? I don't know. Do you have these images separately, like the little tomatoes thing? Do you have that separately?
No, I just have this PDF that was sent to me.
You can do that with the snipping tool.
Yeah, okay, with a PDF or whatever. But I would just ask you to just retype this as a document so it can go into the newsletter. Is there some problem with doing that?
I don't think so.
To the newsletter.
All right.
I don't think so.
All right.
I'll start.
We can put that in. And we need to be talking about, you know, we need to be talking about stuff like local currencies. There's some farms that are doing their own little currencies up someplace I read about in New York or something like that. Somebody could write a little bit about that. You know, Howard got the newsletter down to 2 articles. The last 2 have been short, but we could have 3 articles.
Hmm.
It's better to have just 2 or 3 because, you know, you hope that people will actually read them. Okay, and also, Steve,
yeah.
Wasn't there something about, what's her name, that woman who talks with that guy, Michael Hudson?
Radhika Desai.
Talking with Jill Stein, setting up a meeting with us, or talking with us about something, or did that just fall through and Jill Stein's not interested, or what?
Well, for one thing, Radhika Desai and Michael Hudson interviewed Jill. And Howard sent the link on the list, and I have not watched it, but I want to watch it. He seemed to think that it was positive, although it didn't go as far as we wanted, but there were opportunities there. So I need to see, I think we should all watch that. If you go back and look, and you'll see it from Howard, we should all watch it and then go from there as far as answering your question on Radhika. I mean, Jill loves Radhika, and she was interviewed by them. And if anybody can get through to Jill, it would be Radhika. And we had a good conversation with her, but she agrees with us, but I don't know how much she's forcing the issue either. So I think we need to watch that video before we can really go much further with that. I would encourage us all to do that and prep for next week. Eugene Stack, can you repost the link to that, Steve, please?
I'll look for it and repost it.
Thank you. Does somebody want to read the leaflet?
I can read it if nobody else wants to.
We could take I thought it'd be good to take turns.
Sure.
Yeah. Why don't you start, Steve?
Oh, okay. Enforcing farm parity law ensures national prosperity. The box on the left says, disparity, restore the economy, farm parity works. For every dollar agriculture earns, national income increases $7. When farm prices go down, national income goes down, and debt overload goes up. The farm parity law, 7 U.S.C. 602, having proven its importance to national prosperity, is still on the books, but few know that this law is not being enforced. Parity is still important because fully 70% of the nation's total volume of raw materials production comes from the land through agriculture. Parity is meant to keep our entire economy in balance, agriculture, industry, and commerce. The problem comes when farm crops, in the aggregate, are sold at cheap world prices, but world prices don't pay U.S. costs. These prices force the U.S. farmer into a cost-cutting style of farming that destroys the environment, the soil, and our national income. Farmers struggle to earn a livable income and keep debt low enough to stave off foreclosure. This, in turn, decreases the nutritional quality of our food. By reducing our national income, debt propagates up the food chain from the farmers to the rest of us.
Someone else want to read the next?
Okay, I could. Unless Mary wanted to.
I'll go next.
Okay. A farmer, a simplified explanation of how parity is supposed to work. A farmer has to be able to afford equipment, supplies, and labor to operate the farm and grow our food, and must pay the costs ahead of each year's growing season. Conditions like weather, insects, crop diseases, and global competition can disrupt prices at harvest time and bankrupt U.S. farmers. Production times price equals income for farmers and nations. The parity law was, in essence, a price floor program that referred to a base year for the price of each crop included in the parity program. A base year is a time period when each economic segment earns enough income to pay its costs and allow for profits. The parity law offered farmers a 90% parity loan from the government on the current year's crop delivered to government storage. This ensured our national income was sufficient to pay our obligations without forcing more debt. Okay, so I'll stop
okay,
there.
I wonder how people are taking this. If this is engaging and making sense, or if this is like making us scratch our heads.
Scratch our heads. That's how I'm taking it.
Eugene Stack. I think it's pretty good, and it gave me it put the ideas in common sense format in which I could see the issue more clearly than before I heard it read over.
Cool.
It works for me.
What particular parts appealed to you the most? Were really hit home for you?
I mean, all of it. I mean, I'm not picking out particular items. It just sounds logical. And I have not studied the issue, and therefore it doesn't grip me. It hasn't gripped me in the past.
Uh-huh.
This is for the first time, kind of opens a window a little bit.
Oh. Okay, was somebody else going to comment? Then I will go ahead and read the next part.
I just say it makes sense to me. I'm not having a problem with it.
Cool. All righty. did you want to say anything, Sue, before I go on?
Say that again?
Did you want to say anything before I go on?
No. People's comments are really helpful. And
okay, good.
It's important for me to hear it, too, again and again, because, yeah, like I said, I don't have much experience with this piece of the world.
You're ready to change the page after $30.76. Okay. For example, okay, Kevin just read that 90% parity loan from the government can ensure that the national income is sufficient to pay the obligations without forcing debt. Then it says, for example, say the base year price of wheat was 86.6 cents per bushel. For example, in 1910 to 14, as a reference. If all the factors to produce wheat for that current year, the current year, using March 2022, USDA PPITW index, if all the factors had increased by 35 and a half times, the parity price for the wheat crop would also increase that much, or it would be $30.76 a bushel. $30.76 a bushel a wheat. Okay, going to the next page, there's that text block.
Wait a minute, wait.
That I'm going to skip to continue this paragraph, then I'll go back to it. Calculation of the government loan available on the wheat crop at 90% of that new parity price would be 0.866 per bushel times $35.52 times 90% equals $27.68 a bushel, instead of the actual market price, which was around $10.02 a bushel in March 2022.
Wow.
March when?
2022.
What? Thank you.
So is this an example showing that the farmers are only being offered $10 for something that's worth almost 30? We can see the market price at harvest time dropped far below the expense of producing. With a parity program, the farmer could sell the crop to the government for 90% of its the parity price, thus preserving the value of the crop and the dollar. Farmers would be able to cover costs, make a profit, stay in business, and purchase the equipment and supplies for next year's crop.
Do we have some questions here?
Yeah, well, let's read the box up there. In 2022, underpaid U.S. farmers produced over 1.6 billion bushels of wheat, receiving only $9.30 a bushel. And the parity price was more than $27 a bushel. So, yeah, basically getting a third of what it costs them to produce. Go ahead, Steve.
And
well, so
what's staring me in the face about this is you have to keep in your head the cost that the current day cost that the farmers have to pay to have a profitable business, and they get a price, they can't cover those costs, so they have to go into debt or go bankrupt. And I forget how many million farmers have been pushed off the land the last couple of years. It's horrendous.
Kevin Stack.
Well, Steve was going to say something.
Yeah. Well, I like what Sue just verbally said to us. It's pretty simple and straightforward. As far as these numbers and all that, I get lost in that. But also, it sounds like the only way this parity would work for the farmer is if the government buys his product. Is that what you're saying here? The government would buy it?
No. The government gives a floor price at which the farmer could decide to sell to the government, if the farmer decides to do that.
Yeah, but the government's the only place he can do this. Nobody else is going to buy it at that price.
In the years when parity was active, it's true that, and you might remember from elementary or middle school, the government did have stores of grains for emergency use, there was grain storage of product that the government did buy through this program.
Right. And the other piece that we haven't gotten to yet, I'm not sure if it's in this cell sheet, but when you have a parity program for the farmers for a floor price, that really means that the, how can I put it, there is a parity tariff in place so that cheap goods don't come into the country and make prices for our farm production go lower and lower and lower. So there's this mechanism where you have to protect the American farmer from world prices that come from countries where people are, you know, basically starving and the food is coming here, you know.
And then Kevin had a comment too.
Okay. Number one, okay, the point on parity is okay, but when I look at this, I'm thinking, you know, there are two points of view here, and one point of view is that I got 1.649 billion bushels of wheat for $9.30 a bushel, and these guys are saying they want $27 a bushel. Why should I be in favor of them? My prices are going to triple. Then
you're speaking as the middleman, huh? You're speaking as the commodity dealer at the Chicago Board of Trade, I guess.
I'm speaking as the consumer. Bread already, decent bread already costs $5 a loaf, you know?
Okay.
And then the other thing, too, here is, the just inflating things from the 1913 or something like that. A lot of prices, the value of the dollar has gone down, but a lot of prices have also depreciated. I mean, a lot of things have declined in price because of efficiencies and improvements, or if you want to call it that, but maybe they were overpriced back in the day, and so they're cheaper today. So a lot of things might have done that. So I'm not really... So that's another, and there was some other thing too that was like, how do they handle this? Yes, you said farmers were put out of business, but I think that has to be substantiated. I mean, a lot of farmers have been put out of business, yes, but I think it just has to be substantiated, you know, that it's happened recently. What is the status right now? I know here in Texas, okay, we have had a lot of farmers that have suffered in this state. But it wasn't because of parity pricing. It was because of a drought. It was because of the fact that Texas is drying up and becoming a desert, and a lot of crops failed because of this drought. So that's what drove a lot of farmers out of business. So anyway, over.
So Kevin, let me just reply to some of your ideas. The one about. As a consumer, I'm going to have to pay more for my food, right?
Yeah.
And what you have to keep in mind that's critical about a parity program is that it's not just the farmers. It's not for the farmers particularly, as much as it's for every part, every sector of the economy. Because what's been proven in the history of the statistics of parity periods is that $1 of income for farmers equates to $1 of income for factory workers, equates to $7 of income for the entire national economy. It's at the natural law, and I can give you some sources to read about it. Written.
Yeah, okay, well, I mean, I'm not arguing with you, but I'm saying that as a as a person who tries to think of persuasive ways to say things, that would be my number one point. I wouldn't be talking about, you know, how much the farmers are getting shorted. I would be talking about that what our income should be this.
Right. But it's based on the beginning of the origin of the production from the earth.
Right. Well, you can talk about that. Yes, that's perfectly fine. But, you know, I'm just saying that the sales point would be how much money people can get, you know.
Not how much extra they'd have to pay.
Right. How much more they get, not how much more they have to pay.
Well, you know,
Steve right. Stack.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, so Sue, to really do what Kevin's saying there, when you say $1 translates to $7 increase in the national economy, does that mean an increase in person's wages? Is that what it translates back
income.
To?
Income.
An individual income. It translates back to an increase in individual income.
Right. And there's different income sectors in the economy. There's the raw material producers, of which the farmer is the major one. There's the manufacturers, there's the distributors, there's corporate and unincorporated businesses, and they all generate income. You know, the income of the factory workers are their wages, right?
Okay, and one more thing. Sorry for interrupting, but I do, so I just want to be on the stack too. So, and not forgotten. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Eugene Stack.
Well, Eugene and then Kevin. Yeah.
I'm sorry, so I didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. Yes, I had, there was an article I read in a hopefully reliable publication, but maybe not. I don't know. It's called Inside Climate News. And they were talking about agriculture production in the United States and how the commodity production, like corn and stuff like that, it's mostly for either animal feed or ethanol. And that the statistics they were using left the impression that you could cut the corn crop in half and nobody would even know, except for the ethanol producers.
And so
I was thinking, well, you know, because most of it, they said that there was like 100 million acres and 30 million acres was actually needed for food. The rest of it was basically just for ethanol production and for
animal feed,
right. Which a lot of that is exported to China, I'm pretty sure, because China has this huge population of pigs, and they need to feed them. So, but anyway, yeah. So there's that. This is the other thing too that I just wanted to ask about is that, you know, how does this fit in with degrowth, with the environmental crisis and stuff like that?
Well, Eugene's.
Yeah, Eugene.
There's a component here of commodity markets and how they manipulate the world price of things. You know, mm-hmm. from Australian wheat farmers, Argentina, and other places in the world, cotton farmers in Egypt and India, et cetera, et cetera, and how commodity markets steal and mm-hmm. manipulate and suck up a lot of rents, you know, that they are entitled to, but they grab. And so somehow I think that has to be mentioned. And how world markets, but commodity, you know, commodity markets, the Chicago Board of Trade, and these things, just like they manipulate the oil markets, they manipulate wheat, corn, pigs, and everything else over.
Yep. I would agree with that, Sue. If you're taking notes, something about the commodity market's role in price fixing currently might be. I know you try to keep it short and simple, and oh man, sorry. Go ahead, Kim.
Just a little note here: the commodity markets are similar to the banking cartel in that. Of course, the banking cartel is a major participant in the commodity markets. But one of the other things about it is they simply create contracts. They don't have the money to buy anything, but they create these enormous contracts. Like, you know, I bought, you know, 10,000 ships of bushels of wheat yesterday, you know, on the commodity market. You know, I guess the price is going to go up 20 cents. A bushel and I'll make a fortune, or the price is going down and I'm selling short, you know. But they just make that stuff up. They don't have to have any money for it. It's similar to the banking cartel in our debt money system. That, and so it's kind of, it's an angle that just really kind of occurred to me, but I think, you know, I think that's a more important concept. Anyway, I have to kind of sit on that for a little bit, but I'm glad you let me talk about it. My little flash of inspiration there, whatever. Okay,
well,
over.
Well, there's a piece of parody history. I don't know if it's in here, because we had, you know, this was only two pages. But from 1942 to 52, the national government in our country had a parody program. And because of that, the commodities, Chicago Board of Trade and the commodities futures, all those private corporations that do all of the finagling with the price, they closed. They didn't have a role to play.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Is that pretty important?
Yeah. Yes.
Agreed.
All this history of parity is important because and it's definitely not talked about or included in any history given to.
No, most people would never know that there was a parity program, just like most people don't know that banks create money. And really, it takes a long time to grasp the significance of that.
Right.
Yep. Right. Eugene?
Yes, Eugene.
Just briefly, maybe you begin the importance of parity, that it existed for 10 years. You know, it's not an intellectual game or hypothetical. I mean, it existed in the United States, and it fed the armies to win World War II.
And it fed the people in the United States.
It worked great. Kept farmers out of debt.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, Kevin Stack.
Maybe you don't need to open every leaflet with that 42 to 52, but maybe in another leaflet that you bring that out. But to me, that would grab the audience and say, this is another example of history you don't know. And just like the whole bank, the bank criminal lobby, etc. Over.
Thank you.
I was thinking that we should start our own little MAGA program. Make America Great Again. Parody for all.
Yeah. Interesting.
No, I mean, actually, seriously, because we could, I'm getting the sense here that you could actually make the argument that all of the things that made America great, that made America a really wonderful example country for the world, were things like parity in agriculture, Social Security, all of these ideas, greenbacks, absolutely, greenbacks. Yeah. All these ideas that are in our history that are rejected by the current ruling class and, you know, and that are forgotten or ignored by the corporate media. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm just wondering about that. That I just don't know.
Kevin, follow up that with an article. Rita, could you put that on the agenda?
Sure.
It creates laughter.
I'll make a note to do that. Well, you know, maybe we should do that. Just start out, you know, with the... We could do a series of things on that, you know.
It's a good idea.
Make America Great Again, part one, you know. So.
Yeah.
And what it shows is that Trump doesn't touch any of those things, and the Democrats don't touch it, but they're part of our platform.
Yeah, we'll steal their MAGA thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep reading so we get to the end of it.
Yes.
How do we know current parity prices? The USDA, acting in accordance with law, each month reports prices paid by farmers for things they must buy and prices received for their commodities. And it then calculates the price that farmers would receive if they got 100% of parity. Finally, it calculates what the price of each commodity is as a percent of parity. And there's a link there. And then there's these, at the end, questions you might want to consider if your food depends on it. It probably does. Should we depend on international traders to supply and control our food? U.S. farmers are forced to compete with lower prices globally, and other countries can sell crops in the U.S. below our cost of production. This is bankrupting U.S. family farms. There were 774,940 bankruptcy filings in 2019 and 544,463 filings in 2020.
These were farm bankruptcies?
Yeah, family farms.
Should be clear about that. I know it's what the sentence starts with, but...
It's not clear?
Yeah, well, that's the kind of substantiation you need for your articles.
Yeah,
those kind of statistics on the your claim that it causes this harm. Now you got some figures to back it up.
Yeah. Well, this has been happening since
1952.
After that.
Right, but you know, there's this whole thing of the urban dwellers who believe that food comes from the grocery store. And
I'm one of those urban dwellers.
Right, but I mean, many of them actually do believe that. You ask people, where does your food come from? Well, it comes from the grocery store. I don't know. They have a little man in the back there that makes it, and you know.
Oh, that was part of the long-range plan of the globalists. Move people into the city, separate them from where the real wealth of their life comes from, their food, you know?
Well, that's the plan of the globalists, is to separate them from their wealth. That is for sure. That's what it's about, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So since this is a printed thing, I think that QR codes would be more valuable than those long-ass URLs for your references.
Say that again. I didn't understand, Mary. What?
Like your footnote number two there, https://... I think one of those little square QR codes would work a lot better on a paper flyer. Who's going to copy that?
What would it look URL. Like instead of the URL?
QR. The little square ones that you take a picture of with your camera.
Looks like a checkerboard.
Oh, you need a cell phone, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have a cell phone.
Most people do have them, yeah.
I know.
So I'm just saying that I think those would be more valuable reference points for most readers.
Than the links, right. They probably are.
And then that's just a sideline comment.
Okay.
Go ahead. This is very interesting.
Okay. Why is enforcing parity law still important for us today? Our own country's experience shows farm parity equals economic equity equals national prosperity. It keeps our farmers in business and more of our food homegrown for high quality instead of cheap price. For more information about restoring farm equity to benefit our country and what you can do, go to normeconomics.org and monetary.org. That's it.
Way cool.
All right.
So I have one question that the statistics, is this something that, you know, starting here, you know, where it goes into this example, is that something that put everybody off?
Yes, that is my view, yes.
When
$30 for a bushel of wheat, what's that going to do to my food costs? Oh, my God. So, right, that's what that will scare people. So just, it dramatizes how much the farmers have been cheated, yes. Okay, but it scares people who have to pay for these prices. People are very worried about having to pay high prices because they are being driven into bankruptcy by this usury that we're suffering under. They're very worried about prices.
And just being asked to follow those calculations, the first time I read that, my eyes wanted to glaze over, and I think a lot of people would react like that, possibly stop reading it. The second time when I read it out loud, it made perfect sense.
Most people cannot do basic math, so yeah.
They never have
math on TV. I was talking to my students, you know, how come you don't know any math? Well, it's not on TV.
You know? God.
But it's not. It's not.
That's
what do you expect? What do you expect people to do? They do what they deal with every day. They're quite good at whatever it is they have to deal with. They're very good at that. But they don't have to deal with what we would consider to be educational type topics. So.
Right. Right. You know. I know basic math. You know, I can think, but I have a trouble with these kinds of computations because it's not part of my life, like you said. It's not part of my life, you know.
It's not natural. I'm sorry to have to say that, but no, human beings do not naturally do math. Okay? It is a learned, acquired skill. Because our brains don't work like that. Our brains are, you know, they're just totally oriented to different types of stimulus and different types of figuring. I mean, we figure stuff out, but we don't use algebra, you know, in natural life. But anyway, right, anything like that is going to put off a lot of people because, just like Mary said, their eyes glaze over. They don't understand it. They simply can't understand it. You know, for most of humanity, there are actually three numbers in the number system. 1, 2, and heap.
Heap?
Heap. Anything more than two is a heap.
Wow.
Well, I hear parents do a better job.
I do.
Well, I mean,
I do very good with numbers when I'm rectifying my check register. That's important to me. So I'm very careful. I can do the math and figure out, you know, the bottom line. But that has to do with, you know, my feeling grounded in the world, you know. This is a little difficult for me, you know.
Well, I'm just kind of, you know, making jokes about people and their lack of math ability. But it is actually an issue, so.
Yeah.
It might cause people to stop reading right there, lose interest.
Right. Right. You know what it reminds me of? This is sort of an aside, but I took around four or five years ago, I took a physics course, basic physics, because I had never learned anything about physics. And, you know, I took a lot of notes. I did what I always did in high school, you know, wrote everything down. But I wasn't connected to it in the real world, which is, you know, parody. One of the things I love about studying parody and its history is it does connect me to the real world, you know, out there. And so I found out the other day that in physics, in the physical worlds around us, there are a basic 100 constants of how all of this works around us. And I never realized that there are all of these constants that are generated by this real world that's been created around us, and that there are all these laws that use these constants, these natural laws. And parity is another natural law, you know, it has proof, you know, of course, you know, not taught. Anyway.
Kevin Stack.
Yeah.
There's another issue about parody that was, I already talked about the overproduction of commodity crops like corn, overproduction of corn, GMO corn, all the toxic chemicals and all that. A lot of agriculture is driven not by the need for the agriculture product, but by the need of the corporations to sell the chemicals and the oil companies to sell the oil and stuff. So, what was it? Okay, never mind. I'll think of it later.
Listen, I appreciate everybody's comments. Thank you. It's very helpful.
Thanks for bringing it.
I think we can get a little miles out of that MAGA.
I would make another comment. This typeface is kind of vertical. It does not lead you naturally through it. I think an easier typeface would help you, one that's a little more horizontal.
Well, Sue, if you have a PDF document, it's possible that you can just copy and paste this into a word processor document and just do some, you know, formatting.
I'm sure they've made it in a word processor, Kevin. They've got it in a word processor.
Right. So, and then you could get it where it can be, stuff can be done with it. But just a picture like this, a PDF file like this is, the advantage of the PDF file is that people cannot edit it. So you have some confidence that what you're putting out there actually stays the way you thought it was. But for us, we need to be able to do more stuff with it. So if it was in a different computer file format, it would be better.
Right. I could get the Word document, I think. There's a man who was a guest of the Monitor AMI parody group last Sunday, and he has all this experience with this kind of PDF stuff. So he put it together, you know.
Cool.
And so I'm going to bring everybody's comments back to the AMI parody group about this. This is great, you know, to hear, and we might be updating it, you know, to see.
Yeah, well, I hope you do, because I think the parody... Yeah, oh yeah, that was my point. That was my question. How does parody work with the NEED Act?
Well, it's one of those Section 5. How does the government create money? So
on what basis? So they would create money according to a parody concept?
Well, they would be creating money some of the new money would be created to give the parity floor price to farmers for that program, that loan program.
Okay, well, that's some of the money, all right. But you were saying how that with parity that you would have a debt-free economy and that this would enhance the national income and all that. So the whole thing, in some way, has to relate to the NEED Act. You know, I mean, in a big picture, not just that the money for the parity prices would, because, you know, the government, well, the government would create a lot of money, but then after a while, the government would have created enough money, and then the challenge is to circulate the money. But at least that's the way
I think of it. Kevin, this program would do a lot to bring balance to the entire economy with stimulus money from the NEED Act. I get what you're saying, that it has to relate to the NEED Act in more ways than just that. I get that. But I feel like after a certain amount of stimulus was put into funding this program, that when this, in the years that it happened, it was never considered deficit spending. It never lost money for some reason. Isn't that true, Sue?
Yes, because this, okay, so if you think of a parity economy, the whole economy, it, and what Mary was talking about, the balance in the economy, what does that balance mean? It means that each sector of the economy, not just the farmers, but each sector, the manufacturing, the distribution, the retail, whatever, each sector is selling their production at a price where they can afford to pay all of their costs.
Including their workers.
One of their costs is the labor, the paying their labor.
Right, so you know, people have take-home pay.
There's many costs. This is, you know, my lack of being a small business owner or, you know, large business owner. All the different costs that have to be paid by a company, a small business, a farm, you know, there's many, you know, and if you have to pay those costs, you have to have an income that can generate the money to pay those costs, or you'll go bankrupt, right?
Or borrow,
one or the other. But what's been proven with the parity program is it, like Mary said, it balances all the different sectors of the economy so that no sector is going into debt. That's why it says that it underwrites a national prosperity. And it's a natural law. That's the other piece that's very interesting. You know.
Super cool.
The natural law part I don't like, because people make that argument, you know, to try to give some kind of religious aura to their political agenda. But
well, that goes back to those 100 constants in the physical universe.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about different things where they've come up with, you know, like the speed of light is a constant, stuff like that, right?
Well, they haven't come up with it. It's there.
We discovered that the speed of light is always the same. So that's one of the constants. Am I right in saying that? That's one of your constants? Okay, right. And then there's a certain other constant, you know, gravity and you know, different things like that. But that is just because we do our math, we measure things, and, you know, if things truly are constant, then they are, you know, the math should give you the same answer, you know. That's one of the things about math. You're supposed to all get the same answer to the same question.